Welcome to Software Gone Wild, this time on a daring field trip into security space. We'll be talking about virtual firewalls and software-defined security. To help me on this journey, David G. has joined me. David, how are you doing today?
I'm well, thank you. Looking forward to Christmas, about 3 weeks away now, so counting down the days and, you know, getting involved in crazy upgrades before the Christmas period kicks in. So I'm alright, thank you.
What better time to do upgrades than Christmas period, right?
Hell yeah, it's brilliant. Nobody's around, things go wrong, nobody to fix anything. It's just perfect. So how about yourself? Are you well?
Well, I got a burnout last week, so it ended up with a back pain and I was barely walking for 2 days, but it's getting better.
Ouch. Yikes.
Yeah, the fun part of it was that, you know, I was just starting a two-day SDM workshop when the back pain kicked in.
Ow. Well, maybe the SDM, you know, kind of triggered the back pain. Maybe your body said, you know what, enough's enough. I'm not going to do this today.
Yeah, that's probably it. So I was sick and tired of SDM. That might be it.
Yeah, there we go.
Okay, so let's do security today. And our guest today is Christer Schwartz from Palo Alto Networks. Christer, you haven't started your career at Palo Alto, right? You're a really, really, really old networking guy.
Yes, that's true. I have been in the industry a long time. I was a very early Cisco person. I was actually badge 103, which shows you know how old I am. So I was at Cisco during the founder days and throughout the 90s. And beyond that, worked for Netflix, worked for some carriers, and for the last few years, yeah, have decided that network security is once again interesting.
Great. If I remember correctly, you are actually one of those few guys that have seen a protocol that I haven't seen, and it was Apollo Domain, right?
Yes, very early on. I saw it, and luckily never again, but I did see it briefly.
That's amazing. I've never seen that one. Yeah. By the way, do we have Bob on the line?
I am here. Good morning.
Hey, Bob. So you finally set up your audio.
I did. I should have said I was setting up my audio and caffeine.
Okay. So with us is Bob McCouch. How are you doing, Bob?
I am doing fantastic. We're heading into the winter here in East Coast of the United States, and I am loving it. I'm looking forward to doing some snowboarding soon and getting gearing up for the big holidays. So.
Wow, that sounds fantastic. Okay, sorry for the interruption. So back to Christer. So you were at Cisco, and then you decided that security is interesting, and you joined Palo Alto. So what are you doing there?
Well, you know, if you look at networking in general, I mean, how interesting have firewalls really been for the past 20 years?
Boring.
Yeah, I mean, you know, routing protocols, MPLS, I mean, these are the interesting details. Security has really been static. It hasn't really changed in the past 20 years. But today, you know, the whole focus is on application-aware security. You know, looking at IPs and ports is really quite useless today. Hypervisors and network devices need to be aware of what an application is doing, little sub-functions within it, define policy around that, and then somehow make that all fit into this bright SDN future where all problems will be solved. And that's actually become a big priority these days when everyone's being hacked. So it's a fun industry to be in.
So are you telling me that security industry is all of a sudden fun?
It's all of a sudden interesting. There's a lot of moving parts. You know, if you think back to the mid-90s to a few years ago, there have been no moving parts. I mean, security was security. Port 80 was web. Port 25 was mail. You do a little bit of stateful stuff here and there. But, you know, all the interesting stuff was in the core, in the WAN, in the backbone.
It's a weird planet we live on. Security is interesting. Okay. I trust you.
Okay.
So, obviously, the firewalls that Palo Alto does fit right into that picture, right?
Yes. So, you know, we try to, when we give the elevator pitch about what we do, we would point out that in the past, you probably had a sprawl of devices at the perimeter of your network. You had something doing IPS, something else doing IDS. You had maybe some firewall doing ACLs, maybe a URL filter. You know, you have the sort of a stack of stuff doing that. And in our case, we make one device and we try to make all of that check marks along one single rule. And we don't expect users to really pay attention to IPs and ports. You know, if you want to allow, let's say, Skype, if you want to allow Skype into your environment but block file sharing, that's more than just one or two ports. You know, we look in the data payload. We're looking deep for signatures and application IDs and lots of wonderful magic. And basically a lot of metadata, and then write policy against that rather than IPs. And have it respond immediately to network changes. When anything changes in a network, new servers are spun up or torn down, we don't want to have to create manual change controls, because that's normally what happens when a new IP is born. A firewall needs to be updated. That's a manual step. And we want to be able to somehow have that respond automatically, because especially in an SDN environment, the assumption is everything is very dynamic. The firewall needs to somehow be aware of all that and respond in real time across the data center, across a core. Firewalls are hardware and virtual. All of that needs to somehow magically work together, and that is the magic we do.
Okay, now let's focus on this magic. You said, let's say I have a scale-out web application, and I just figure out that the servers are overloaded. I add another virtual machine as another web server. And you're saying that this thing would automatically be added to the firewall rules.
Yes. So if you have, say, we integrate with both VMware and KVM. And in either one of those environments, as you attach a new VM to either of those hypervisors will communicate to us via some API calls saying, basically, I have a new IP address. Here it is. And by the way, here's a lot of workload information associated with that IP. What applications are on it, what operating systems, what UUID, a lot of interesting tags. And then we can write security based on those things. So we can say that all of my Ubuntu servers can talk to everything in London, at that level. And underneath that, IP addresses could change without policy having to be modified each time.
So is that done through a templating mechanism of some sort? Or is the assumption that you've got all of that policy already built in the firewall per group, and you're simply essentially assigning some sort of group identifier through that API call?
Well, we have, yes. We have an idea that we call dynamic address groups, and that's really the ability to take a rule and predefine that as being able to listen to these API calls. So we will say, okay, this, let's say your web servers are going to experience a lot of churn coming up, coming down. We will allow this rule to be controlled by the underlying hypervisor. Now we have exposed our entire command set via REST APIs. So anything you can type at our CLI can be an API call. And that has been imported into the various underlying environments. Those APIs are used to push out all of this metadata to us. And then our firewall says, okay, my rule will listen to this. I will update myself and I will push this out to all of the other firewalls in the data center. So as vMotion events happen, or if you have bare metal service, they all agree. There's no ships in the night where the physical security has one picture, the virtual has another. So that's sort of how we do that magic. The goal is to avoid the manual firewall change control, which everybody hates.
Oh, so you could just define the applications in the firewall rules, and as people add new servers or new instances, you don't have to change the firewall rules.
Exactly. Because the assumption is, especially in SDN, is that this is happening all the time. And it can also remove rules, because who out there ever cleans up their firewall rules?
Yeah, that's a big problem.
Oh, me.
Okay, you are the only one. Because, firewall rules only grow, they don't shrink. And if you ask somebody to print it out, they don't know what a third of the rules do. But nobody's brave enough to remove them, because there might be something they'll break. With this ability of these API calls, the hypervisor, if it tears down 10 IPs, it will reach out to our firewall and send out the relevant API call saying, delete this information, it's no longer there.
With regards to that then, so can you do something along the lines of set up a rule that basically says, if this rule hasn't been triggered in a week, send me an email, send me an SNMP trap. So what are the monitoring capabilities around that? So it's one thing being able to add things and take away things via API calls, but then there's some analytics which will be really useful for a lot of enterprises.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we do. And now all of this is logged, so an unused rule will be logged. It's also done in our GUI. We have a nice pretty GUI, and you can actually color code rules that after they have been idle for 6 months, they turn red. So that's visually, you can just look at it right away and say, okay, these 10 rules are red. I don't need them anymore. I can retire them or delete them. And you can do this scripting equivalent of the same thing. So you're ensured that the rules that you look at are actually currently used rules and not something they deployed 10 years ago and nobody knows what they do.
Awesome.
Now, you said that you can work with both VMware and KVM.
Right, that's correct.
And usually you would have to work with some orchestration system and get the information from the orchestration system. So which orchestration systems do you support?
So in the case of VMware, we work with, we broadly make two types of virtual firewalls. And one of them is specific to VMware's NSX. And in that case, we use theirs. So they have their own built-in orchestration systems. They have imported all of our APIs. We support their APIs, so we all work as one happy family. In KVM, we have integration with OpenStack. So we have a plugin for the Neutron module for OpenStack, which contains all of this, these wonderful APIs as well. So as Neutron is used to deploy us into an environment and is used to deploy other VMs, it will use that plugin to basically put us in the path of traffic and send us this information. So we have basically written this and plugged it into Neutron in their case, and whereas VMware has done the opposite. And in VMware outside of NSX, so if you look at vSphere but not NSX, in that case, we can pull their orchestration system. So every 5 seconds, we can ask, hey, do you have any new information? And then we can pull that information back in. We do the same thing in an Amazon environment. You can put us in a public cloud. Again, we will pull the underlying environment for this information. So it could be pushed or pulled.
So in the regular vCenter case, you're using the vCenter SOAP APR or whatever it is to get the data to the firewall.
Exactly, pulling, basically pulling.
Yeah.
So NSX is aware of us and does this for us. vSphere will respond, but will not push to us. We pull it.
Mm-hmm.
And is there any sort of feedback visible in, say, vCenter, for instance, as to what's going on in the firewall, or is that communication kind of under the covers, and you've got two panes of glass you're looking at between vCenter for the virtualization and, you know, whatever GUI you're looking at on the firewall?
Today, it's two panes of glass, and that's really because if you look at vCenter and you also look at OpenStack, their view of security is still port-based, especially OpenStack. I mean, it's based on IP tables. So the traditional view of network security is I'm going to look at a packet, and I'm going to identify the application by looking at the port. Okay, you're port 80, you must be web. You know, we are a so-called next-generation firewall because we're looking deep into data payload and pulling out all sorts of interesting signatures. That those concepts are not there in either OpenStack or vCenter. So if you look at vCenter, you're going to see basic port-based information. You're not going to, you know, see all the deeper stuff that we do. So until those concepts change, and we're working with the OpenStack community to try to update Neutron's vision of security and also VMware. So you will see that probably eventually. But today, because security is still sort of static in these underlying environments, and we do a lot deeper stuff, you have to look at two panes of glass.
Now, talking about Neutron, you're probably providing the security groups, right?
Yes.
So effectively, you write the firewall rules using the security groups from OpenStack, and then as the OpenStack adds virtual machines to security groups, you get that information.
Yeah, so if you were to look at the Neutron plugin, there are several modules within it, and you have firewall as a service, load balancing as a service. Now, you would think that we would write our plugin for one of those modules. We actually do not. We replace the OpenStack router module. So as Neutron deploys the networking details, there comes a step where it deploys an OpenStack router between tenants. Well, we actually become that router. So you deploy us in the path of traffic, and then you can write your basic rule sets from there. But OpenStack has no they're missing some important concepts, like any real concept of service chaining, deep, you know, any security deeper than what IP tables does. So you can start at OpenStack, but to actually write this application-aware, context-aware security, you need to then reach over to us and do that. That can be scripted, but you're still taking a step outside of OpenStack to complete the picture.
So in the OpenStack environment, you're really the inter-subnet or Layer 3 firewall.
Yes, we are a Layer 3 firewall. Yeah, if you look at the OpenStack Layer 3 router, we replace that.
Mm-hmm. And you are between subnets.
Yes, this is a Layer 3 concept.
Yeah, I know that you also have this other product where you can seamlessly insert the firewall between the VM NIC and the virtual switch.
Right, so that's how NSX operates. So NSX, we would like to describe that as being able to achieve the goal of full micro-segmentation, almost like putting a firewall at every single VM. And we do this above the forwarding plane. So their approach allows you to use their service composer tool to state that as soon as a packet is born from this VM, and before it hits the forwarding plane, steer it off to Palo Alto Networks. We do all of our magic to it, and we then send it back. And then the packet reaches the distributed vSwitch. By the time it hits the vSwitch, security has already been applied. So we're basically doing network security above the network.
What kind of performance impact do you see that having? I'll tell you, in most data centers that I've worked in, there's very little interior firewalling. And, right. I think there's always been kind of a stigma that, performance is king in the data center environment, right? And firewalling is something you do only if you're absolutely forced to by, regulatory concerns or something like that. What do you see in terms of performance requirement there or performance impact? And, are you seeing broad deployment of, real, true, deep next generation firewall services within, interior to data center environments?
Yeah, those are basically two questions. And so firewalls deeper than the perimeter in a data center is not common. So in my data center background, again, firewalls are not interesting. We don't want them any deeper than the perimeter because it's doing routing or it's doing switching. It's just one more thing to troubleshoot. We find that customers who are deploying NSX are doing this. And this basically allows you to avoid putting firewalls in your network. Because if you push the firewalls or your security concepts as close to the VM as possible, and you have firewalls out at the perimeter, you're now leaving the core network alone. So if you're going to create overlay networks or whatever in the middle of your network, there's no firewall. They don't have to be there because you're enforcing security as close to the edges as possible. On NSX, as soon as you virtualize any network device, you lose the ability to guarantee performance because you no longer control the hardware, right? If you have a nice fast router or a nice fast firewall, in our case, we can guarantee 100 plus gig because we control the ASICs, we control the FPGAs, it's our hardware. Right now, when you look at the performance numbers, it's very much your mileage will vary. If you put us on low-end hardware, we're going to be slow. If you put us on high-end, we're going to be fast. Are we the only VM on the hypervisor, or are we sharing with 10 others? What are the traffic patterns like? A lot of little packets, fewer bigger packets. So with all of that, we have a budget. We need to have a minimum of 2 virtual CPUs assigned to us. We use one for the data plane, one for the management plane. You can allocate up to 8 virtual CPUs to us. And depending on all of these traffic patterns, we always recommend, you can download our firewalls for free. They'll work for 2 months. Download them, deploy them, and see what you look like. And keep in mind, people have to keep in mind the distinction between east-west traffic and north-south traffic, because usually the really high volumes are north-south. So as packets are going to storage or going to external clients, that's generally where the high throughput is. East-west, when you virtualize your tiers, that's generally less throughput. So there's this budgeting going on. So what we see is if people pay careful attention to their flows, we have yet to see customers coming to us with problems that are due to our deployment on the firewall. If they deploy 25 or 30 VMs in the same environment, the problem is really more of a larger architecture. I haven't seen anybody complain to us that, look, Palo Alto is hogging 50% of my CPU. We have not seen that.
Very interesting. Now, from a deployment standpoint with regard to the actual sort of, I'm assuming there's in the virtual case, you've got a virtual appliance, right? Is that deeply plugged into the hypervisor? I'm kind of thinking like, the Cisco Nexus 1000V type model, or is this really a VM running on some host in the network that you're funneling traffic through, or is it running on every host? How does that work?
Yeah, so remember, we make 2 kinds of virtual firewalls. So we make one that is strictly a virtualized equivalent of our hardware. And so we didn't make an acquisition. We didn't first make hardware and then acquire a company. And now we have 2 different code bases. We just took our hardware, virtualized it, and that's one kind of firewall. So we call that the gateway. And that would be equivalent deployment-wise to the Nexus 1000V. So we're sitting on the vSwitch. You create, in VMware's case, your port groups or your private VLANs. You stick us in the middle. You point traffic to us. We can be layer 3 mode, layer 2. Logically, traffic is flowing through us in the same way as you would in a physical environment. We see traffic between VLANs, but we don't see traffic within VLANs. So if you have 2 VMs in VLAN A and they talk to each other, we don't see it, but we will see it as it crosses VLANs. The one in NSX's case, remember, we are a VM, but we're not deployed on the vSwitch. So if you draw it on a whiteboard, the first one, you draw a vSwitch and you draw us, we're a VM. In the NSX case, we're sort of sitting in the hypervisor. We're no longer connected to the vSwitch, and we are seeing traffic via these series of API calls before networking concepts even enter the picture.
But the firewalling is still done in a VM. It's not a kernel module.
Exactly. So in NSX's cases, they have a firewall, which is a kernel module, and they always get traffic first. Then using their composer tool, it passes it to us, which, and we are a VM, but we're not in a, we're sort of sitting off in what they call a service. So services, a virtual firewall, a virtual load balancer, are VMs, but they're not directly connected to the distributed switch as a guest VM would.
So you're not sitting between the subnets, you're sitting somewhere in a dark room, and you only see what their firewall module or their service composer is passing to you.
Right. And remember, this is happening above the forwarding plane. So it's really a sort of bit streams that are being moved around. A packet is born, but before a VLAN tag is placed on that packet, it is steered off to us at the bitstream level. We do all our processing. We can then pass it off to a virtual F5, you know, do this service chaining above the forwarding plane. So it's sort of a network security above the network. It's a relatively unique idea. The Nexus 1000V is virtualizing a physical topology into a virtual equivalent, VLAN to VLAN, firewall sit between VLANs. In NSX's case, they've created this unique concept of doing network security above the forwarding plane.
Well, Cisco would disagree. They would say that their VSG does exactly the same thing, but let's not go there.
Okay. I agree.
Interesting. So can I just ask a question around how the management network looks? So in the case of NSX, we put in this VM, the redirects happen, like I said, the bitstream level traffic's forwarded into the VM. How do you manage that VM then? Do you manage it through the actual hypervisor itself, or is there an external network interface that the management tools connect into?
NSX manages the deployment of our VM firewall. So there's a series of steps where we tell VMware that we exist, it grabs the OVF file, and it manages a deployment. Now, once it comes to life and is being run, the management no longer is done from within NSX. And that's by design, because firewalls are generally controlled by different teams than control servers. Sysadmins and security teams don't really trust each other. I mean, if I'm a security person, do I want a sysadmin to now be able to go and control my firewall? Probably not. So once NSX has deployed everything, you then manage that firewall either directly by itself, or but usually through a management platform. We have something called Panorama, which is a device out there elsewhere on the network, which will manage all firewalls, hardware, virtual, all the same. So there's really two steps. NSX controls deployment, and then management is done by us, by our platform.
Okay, that might raise a question. And how do you then secure your management network? And it's kind of the whole chicken and egg piece, maybe. Unless you just, you kind of allow the thing to talk via a VLAN northbound, and obviously connect to your management network in isolation.
Yeah, you're right. It is a chicken and egg scenario. So yes, you do have to then go out and secure that in the same way you would other management resources. So, again, we're giving you the tools. How you use them is up to how well you design your picture.
Okay, cool.
Just another question to clarify how this darkroom magic works. Your VM is getting the data before it enters the virtual switch. Does it mean that the VM has to be on the same host? So does that mean that the firewall VM has to be on the same host as the user VM? Or can the firewall VM be on a different host?
Since we're focusing on NSX, they enforce a rule of one service per hypervisor. So if you have a virtual firewall like us and you have two hypervisors, it's one per hypervisor. VMs are, so when you use a service composer tool, a packet on a local host is received by the distributed firewall, the NSX firewall on that host. And then if it needs to steer it to us, it will again do that on that local host. So yes, it's all locally processed. Their firewall is distributed across multiple hypervisors. So if you have 10 hypervisors, it has one logical firewall across all of them. But services are all local per hypervisor.
So in the Palo Alto case, then if I've got 300 hypervisors in my environment, then I'm actually running 300 instances of the Palo Alto firewall?
Yes. So this is not enforced by us, by VMware. So if you have a hypervisor missing us, if you have, say, 100 NSX hosts, and one of them does not have us, and a packet is received by the composer on that host, it's not going to steer that off to a service on a different hypervisor. It's just the way the distributed firewall, in their case, works. In our other case, our other firewall, which works a little bit more like the 1000V, in that case, you can deploy multiple firewalls on how many hosts you want. But NSX has a local, when it comes to processing via services, it's a locally processed concept.
It kind of makes sense, but I guess then that brings two questions to mind for me. One is configuration, kind of synchronization management between, you know, potentially hundreds of instances of firewalls, and also licensing. What does that look like when you've got, you know, you then have to deploy 300, 500, 1,000 firewalls?
Yeah, so the first question regarding synchronizing management, when you're using the Service Composer tool and you define some new rule, that is being pushed out either to the local firewall or out to our central management platform, Panorama. So if you push it out to that, then you don't really need to worry about synchronizing because we do that. So NSX talks to us. We then push that information out to all of our own firewalls. So that problem is solved on our end, not the NSX end.
Okay, but that requires the Panorama management platform then to keep all that in sync so that if I'm vmotioning, you know, a host from one hypervisor to another, the, you know, the rules are still there.
Yes. Without Panorama, if you did not do that, you would have to update every firewall yourself or script it. But yeah, Panorama is the one pane of glass for all our firewalls. Again, hardware and virtual. So if NSX creates some of this information, sends it to Panorama, Panorama will push that out to all of your virtual and hardware firewalls, which means that if a packet enters your perimeter hardware firewall at your data center perimeter and it's destined for some VM, that firewall can do all the enforcement there. It doesn't need to push it up to some virtual firewall. You know, we don't have like ships in the night where you have a virtual picture of the network and a hardware. It's all one picture.
Oh, that part's very cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Regarding licensing, we follow VMware's model, really. So we license our virtual firewalls the same way we do our hardware per unit. There is a volume discount at some point, but if you have five virtual firewalls, you have a license for each one.
Now, a weird question. When I was testing the VMware's vShield app before it became vCNS, there was this possibility of vMotioning VM to a host that was not protected with a firewall, and obviously that VM would automatically become exposed to the rest of the network. Are they still having that same problem, or do they know that they cannot vMotion from a protected to an unprotected host?
I don't know the answer to that because we don't directly interact with vShield. If you take NSX out of the picture and you just have vShield and vShield app and vShield Edge, and you have us, generally what we tell people is that we're not really replacing vShield app and Edge. If you want their version of security, which again is traditional port-based security, we can live alongside that. We sort of operate totally independent of them. In our case, if VMs get vMotion and they're talking to us, if they're connected to a distributed switch, we will still see that inter-VLAN traffic. But we are completely unrelated to vShield. vShield sort of does its processing over here, and we do ours somewhere else, and we don't interact. So what the status of vShield is itself, I don't know.
Okay, so in the vShield case, you would be the traditional inter-subnet firewall.
Right, just like in a physical world.
Yeah. What about the NSX case? If you're running inside the NSX Service Composer, could it happen that someone would vMotion a VM from a host that is protected to another host that is unprotected?
You mean to a host without a virtual firewall on it? Yes, that is possible. Now, I haven't actually seen that scenario, but just if that was to happen, remember, their firewall is logically spans hypervisors. So if it's locally processing through us and it decides to vMotion it to an unprotected host, as long as that switch is distributed across hosts, it'll still push it off to us for the life of that session. Now, if that session ends and a new session is begun on that new unprotected host, Service Composer will receive it, but it won't see us there. If Service Composer, if it does not see a service, if it's defined to steer to Service X, and Service X is just not present, it will simply process it locally. It will do its traditional port-based firewalling without steering to us. It won't drop the connection. It just will have nothing to steer to.
Which also answered the question, what happens if your VM crashes?
Exactly right. So there's no HA as such in this scenario because their firewall owns all sessions. You know, normally what would happen is a hypervisor-wide failure would happen. But if we had a memory leak, for instance, and we died, the state would not be lost. State would be maintained, but it would then be processed sort of at a lower security level while we come back to life, and then it will resume steering to us after some kind of timeout value. So we basically hand HA off to them. So, you know, they're controlling it.
So you don't run two copies of the firewall on the same host, just in case.
Well, we can't. Again, this is how NSX enforces their service concept. You can only ever deploy a single virtual firewall, a single virtual load balancer, whatever, per hypervisor. So it's just simply not possible. In the other case, we can. On non-NSX, you can deploy one or five firewalls per hypervisor. In NSX, it's one per hypervisor.
Yeah, in the other case, you have the traditional firewall and you build the traditional HA cluster. It's only virtualized, right?
Yes. It's the physical world virtual equivalent.
Yeah.
Okay. So if I can just probably wind back maybe a couple of discussions around actually deploying this thing and actually connecting up the kind of panorama and the single pane of glass to manage it. So if I take Ivan's kind of, dare I say it, the VSG word, that was a bit of a nightmare to set up. So there were several LANs that you had to put in place. One that was like a data interface, which actually dealt with the VPath and encapsulated packets. Another one was, you know, another LAN that talked off to vCenter. Another one was, you know, something else that talked to the VSM. And there's loads of little bits of integration that you have to do to make that work. How simple is this? So if you take the NSX product and we say, right, we then put the VM on, we then get the service composer to send the traffic. Is there like a set of dedicated interfaces, one that takes the actual the bitstream traffic and another one that faces, you know, the vSwitch for management? Obviously, it's going to need an IP address to be able to communicate, I assume.
Yes. So in our NSX virtual firewall, we have all of three interfaces, one for management and then two others for incoming traffic and outgoing traffic. And we only operate at what we call the vWire mode, which is almost like a tap mode. Our other firewalls will do full layer 3 routing. So you can run BGP and OSPF and do all your layer 3 stuff on the other one. In the NSX model, there's no layer 3 and there's no layer 2. There's all of three interfaces. So when you deploy us, it's a fully automated, scriptable event. We register ourselves with NSX, which says we exist. Our OVF file lives over there. Here's our licensing information. And at that point, NSX has a built-in set of steps where it does all of that. It deploys us. It connects us to the management interface. And it will give us a default IP address, which can then be changed. And then we're up and running. I mean, there are the other steps you mentioned just don't exist in this concept because we're integrated into VMware. It knows about us so that there's not a lot of this, you know, hack-like stuff that needs to happen in the background. It's a pretty smooth, clean process.
I'm really pleased you said that, actually. So the whole, you've got two interfaces, one for ingress and one for egress. So it actually, it goes through the device and you're not just signaling tokens or anything like that. And that's the way the VSG work, where you actually got a token that says you're allowed or you're not allowed. So you're actually forcing the traffic through the VM and then sending it onwards into the vSwitch.
Yeah, right. There's no, I mean, what you're describing, that all that ugliness is just simply not there. But since we're not doing layer 3, again, you're going to see some things missing, like you know, all of routing functions. And the only reason they're not there is because in NSX, they have their own routing modules. They have the DLR and ESG stuff that does routing there. So there's no point in putting that in us. So we run in what we call VWire mode, which, again, is like a transparent, almost tap-like.
Yeah, that was easy to understand. It sounds nice and straightforward. Fantastic stuff. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Going back to the API stuff, we started by you explaining how the firewall rules can be dynamically adapted to new VMs being spun up, for example. Mm-hmm. Now, after all this discussion, if I understood correctly, that would work best if this interaction with NSX or vCenter or what have you is done with Panorama. Is that right?
Right, our central pane of glass, yes.
Yeah. So in a large-scale deployment, I would more or less have to deploy Panorama to get all the benefits of what we've been discussing today, right?
Right, unless you used our scripting. You know, again, our entire command set is exposed via REST APIs. There are customers who will write their own Puppet or Chef scripts to orchestrate centrally on their own. So you can do that if you'd like. But, you know, Panorama is a much cleaner approach. It will handle licensing. It does central reporting. We can spit it out to Splunk. Panorama is a much better option for centrally managing large environments.
Oh, now that you mentioned multi-tenancy, does Panorama handle multi-tenancy? So can I have multiple independent users, each one of them changing his own rule sets?
Today, no. We do have an SDK where customers can write, or you can create some individual portals where they see their own rules. But if you go to Panorama, it doesn't segment this out. If you look at the logs, for instance, it's one monolithic log today. You can create some administrative, you know, pointing at different things, but now true multi-tenancy is not there today. I mean, you will eventually see that, but today the answer is basically no.
Interestingly, sorry, you said about the SDKs kind of perked my interest up there. Not that I'm interested before, you know what I mean? Anyway, probably take that out of the editing. So the SDK, what does that allow you to do, and what languages is that available in? So I imagine then there's going to be some kind of a web interface or a kind of small web server or something like the WSGI or whatever it is. And then the ability then to pull rules out by an ID or give it some metadata and then obviously extract those from Panorama.
Well, this is used largely by MSSP customers, managed service providers, and they will use this with our hardware. So you can take one of our hardware firewalls, carve it up into over 200 vSys, so basically like a Cisco context with a VRF. So you have isolated administrative instance, an isolated routing table, and then customer A will pass through that vSys, customer B will pass through the second vSys. And then the SDK creates a portal where you can define rules for one vSys and define other rules for another vSys. So you have this segmentation concept by that concept, by carving up your box into these logically distinct firewalls. That exists on our hardware, not on our software. If you want to have multiple logical instances of a virtual firewall, you just deploy multiple virtual firewalls. But this SDK is used in the hardware concept. And again, okay. it's still one instance of code. If you have a portal to one vSys and that crashes, it's not like the others keep running. You have one, it's all writing on one kernel.
Yeah.
And it's all one. So multi-tenancy, basically, we say today, does not, in the sense that most people ask about it, is not there today. You know, of course, you'll see that eventually, but today it's not.
Okay. So, I mean, that probably, without knowing what the licenses is, the license costs look like, are there any plans to go down a volume route at some point, or are you going to kind of do almost do blister packs of licensing where you can get, you know, 10 or 50 steps at kind of cost-effective breakpoints?
Yeah, we have that today. The breakpoint, I don't remember the number. You have to look on our site, but sure. I mean, if you buy enough, sure, we have a volume concept licensing model.
Do you also have the bandwidth licensing? So can I buy infinite number of firewalls as long as I don't go over 1 gig aggregate, for example?
No, our licensing doesn't work that way. It's just like our hardware. So you can use it as much, you know, it's per box, it's per unit. You buy this box, you buy this virtual image, that's the license. The only additional features that you would pay for are, we have, for instance, a threat intelligence cloud service. So if we receive a packet and we have no idea what it is, we think it might be malware, it's 0-day stuff. We can push it out to this cloud-based sandbox, and then we let the virus do its stuff, and then within a short period of time, we write a new signature and then push that out to every customer on the planet. That is an additional license feature that you pay for. But how you use it, how much traffic you push through it, bandwidth, that we don't license based on that.
So in a multi-tenant environment, effectively, I would need one license per tenant, right?
Yes. Yeah, the way the model works today, yes.
Mm-hmm.
What, one license per tenant per box, wouldn't it?
Yeah. If you use, again, you can carve up one box into multiple vSys, like I mentioned, but in a virtual world, yes, it would be one-to-one.
And then if we go down that path and every tenant gets his own small firewall, they can then manage that firewall through whatever API or CLI or GUI, right?
Yes, and there are several quite large service providers that are following that model today. So if they build a public cloud service and a new tenant is spun up, it will deploy one of our virtual firewalls, the non-NSX variety, we call it the gateway. This is now your firewall. You manage it yourself. You access the GUI or the CLI. So the provider is responsible for deploying that firewall, but then now that tenant locally administers that firewall. And this is why we make low-end versions of our virtual firewall and high-end versions. And for that environment, generally the low-ends are given. The differences are just by capacity. So if you only need 5,000 rules, here's a low-end virtual firewall, but it's yours. You're on your own. You break it. You broke it. You know, we, the provider, the service provider, are not going to manage it for you. And that way you sort of create a multi-tenancy concept via the larger architecture rather than through the actual firewall.
Okay.
Christopher, how does VPN work in, I'm assuming you could do that with the gateway flavor there. I'm not talking about remote access VPN, but rather, you know, like a land-to-land VPN for connecting a cloud instance to a, you know, to an enterprise.
Sure. Yeah, people do that today. And again, you're right. You need a firewall with some layer three concepts to do that. So yes, you can use the non-NSX gateway version of our virtual firewall to do a VPN. Just like our hardware. Again, basically anything you can do in our hardware, you can do in software, and including VPNs.
Gotcha. Okay. Now, we keep talking about NSX versus the non-NSX version. Just so I understand, you could run a gateway mode instance in an NSX environment to provide those other functions. It's just not using the NSX service chain. Is that correct, or are those two mutually exclusive?
No, you are correct. And we do have people doing exactly that. So they will deploy the NSX version to allow full micro segmentation. So using the composer above the forwarding plane steering idea, they use the NSX flavor of our firewall for that. Now, they might want to put a firewall elsewhere between segments, or as packets leave the physical box out to the, you know, from the physical world back into the virtual, they sometimes will put a firewall there for the purpose of terminating VPNs or just putting us in tap mode and reporting. We're doing traditional firewall in there. So you can mix and match. They're not exclusive.
Yeah, it seems like they almost, you know, kind of serve two different purposes there between, you know, the micro-segmentation sitting on the VNIC, intra-VLAN, right, versus sort of a traditional layer three mode firewall that's doing, you know, Edge, it might be doing NAT stuff, it might be doing VPN, right? So there's definitely use cases for them to complement one another.
Yes, and the ones doing Edge and NAT and VPN, people generally understand that because it's familiar. What's usually new to people is this other idea that NSX is. So we tend to do most of the explaining on that side. And then once everybody understands, they say, okay, yes, let's mix and match. The one does not replace the other.
Yeah, makes sense.
Okay, can you also manage, so let's say if you run in a mixed environment like this then, so you can still use a single instance of Panorama to manage the gateway devices and the kind of inline ones as well?
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely. So Panorama can be in one place where you have a common config template, common place where all your licensing lives, common reporting. And yep. So reporting is interesting because you might want to know, you know, where has Christopher's packets been? So some go through the NSX firewall, some go through the gateway firewall, some go through the hardware firewalls. You know, Panorama will reach out to all of that stuff, push it into its logs, and process and report centrally.
Okay, that sounds good. I think I've just got a question around where would we go to actually get a demo of this? Have you got any online sandboxes where we can look and touch and feel? Well, maybe not touch, but kind of feel and play? Or is it a case of we can download a limited time trial demonstration set of software?
Yeah, both actually. So we have some cloud environments in which we have these running. So you would contact your local Palo Alto sales team and they would point you to that. You can also download, and again, you have to contact them again to download an eval version. So you can download free versions. They will run for 60 days. Our friendly salespeople will give you some kind of temporary license, which will do that. So you can see how it works. You can deploy it yourself for about 2 months before you have to make any commitment.
And to get all the other information, I guess it's all on your website, including the documentation, right?
Exactly. PaloAltoNetworks.com.
So thank you, Christopher, for this wonderful intro to software-defined security. If people have questions about Palo Alto products or just want to know more or want to get in touch with you or anything along these lines, where can they find you?
I'm on LinkedIn. So my name is Christopher. So it's like Christ with an E-R. Last name is Swartz, so S-W-A-R-T-Z. So you can find me on LinkedIn. You can also find me, if you do a search on my name on our Palo Alto firewall, you can find me there as well.
Blogs, Twitter?
No, I actually don't use Twitter very much. So today I do some blogs on our site. My personal, no, it's not very active. So if you try to contact me that way, I may not reply for 2 months. So right now it's really our website and LinkedIn today.
Okay, so people, you've heard him. Go to LinkedIn. And David, where can people find you?
So you can find me at my blog at ipengineer.net, and on the Twitters, it's David John G, or at David John G.
And Bob?
Well, you can always find me on my blog at herdingpackets.net. That's herding, not hurting. I am also on LinkedIn, for those interested. And of course, you can find me on Twitter as at Bob McCouch.
Thank you. And I'm Ivan Pepelniak, and I'm lurking around ipspace.net. And if you're still listening to this podcast, you must be interested in SDN. So go to ipspace.net/SDN to find more webinars, books, podcasts, blog posts about SDN. And don't forget, if you can't decide what webinar to listen to, there is an interesting thing to solve your dilemma. It's called the subscription. You buy that one, you get access to everything. Finally, if you like this podcast, go to iTunes and write a review, because we still don't have enough reviews, and that's a shame. So please do your job. Go there, write a review. Thank you.